Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the escalating fight against the Koch brothers in the United States Senate, where the majority leader announced Thursday he plans to hold a vote that would grant Congress the authority to regulate and limit the raising and spending of money for federal political campaigns. A longtime observer of Congress and politics, Norman Ornstein, who writes a weekly column for the National Journal and The Atlantic called Congress Inside Out, joins us to discuss the strategy behind the increasingly combative rhetoric coming from Harry Reid, who has vowed to overturn the Supreme Court's Citizens United, McCutcheon and Buckley v. Valeo decisions. Then we will speak with Mark Ames, the founding editor of the satirical Moscow biweekly The Exile, who is now a senior editor at Pando Daily, where he has an article, Sorry America, Ukraine Isn't All About You. In contrast to the current alarmist versus apologists debate over Putin's assertive new Russia that either attributes the Ukraine crisis to the actions of an evil empire builder or blames the West for pushing Putin into a corner where he had no choice but to grab Crimea, we will discuss the missing piece, and that is Putin's domestic agenda that Mark Ames sees as being remarkably similar to Nixon's appeal to the silent majority in red state America. Then finally, we'll examine the fading political fortunes of Turkey's Prime Minister Erdogan, who first appeared as a charismatic modernizer, but this year has stumbled from one crisis to another and now seems to be digging the hole deeper with his insensitive and callous handling of a mining disaster that has left about 300 miners dead with 150 missing. Asla Bali, a professor at the UCLA School of Law who deals with Turkish issues and visits Turkey often, joins us to discuss how this apparently tone-deaf leader maintains a hold on Turkish politics. And joining us now is Norman Ornstein, who's a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a longtime observer of Congress and politics, and he writes a weekly column for the National Journal and The Atlantic called Congress Inside Out. Mr. Ornstein led a working group of scholars and practitioners that helped shape the law known as McCain-Feingold that reformed the campaign financing system. His many books include The Permanent Campaign and Its Future, The Broken Branch, How Congress is Failing America and How to Get It Back on Track, and most recently, the New York Times bestseller, It's Even Worse Than It Looks, How the American Constitutional System Collided with the New Politics of Extremism, co-written with Thomas Mann. Welcome to Background Briefing, Norman Ornstein.
Great to be with you, Ian.
And it seems like that Harry Reid is really on a sort of stem winder there, taking to the floor of the Senate and railing against the Koch brothers and now talking about backing a constitutional amendment. That, of course, is a long haul. Is there some strategy behind the rhetoric?
Yeah, this is not just a sort of fit of anger aimed at two people. There is a strategy here. The constitutional amendment, which has been proposed by Tom Udall of New Mexico, and which Reid is going to bring up for a vote, he knows that that's not going to occur in the near run or perhaps ever. But if you've got something out there and you get people who have to vote on it, you raise the profile of the issue of money in politics. And if you focus on the Koch brothers, you personalize it in a way that doesn't resonate with voters, and at this point, especially the Democratic Party's base voters, in the same way as an abstract appeal against the 1% would do. You know, the timing is, I think, a good one for him on this because, of course, we've just had the McCutcheon decision by the Supreme Court, which took the terrible, in my view, Citizens United decision and made it infinitely more terrible. What John Roberts has done in his opinion in this McCutcheon decision is, first of all, to move from just independent money, which is not independent as we know, but independent of the candidates, to opening up enormous floodgates back from where we had been before the McCain-Feingold bill for money directly given to parties, which will be directed to candidates. And it's remove corruption other than direct quid pro quo corruption of the American hustle or abscam variety, a bribe that's captured on videotape, from any consideration in the role of money in politics. Now individuals can give, in a cycle, $3.75 million to party committees that can be channeled directly to candidates. It means a couple can give $7.5 million. And you look at the tens or hundreds of millions that the Koch brothers have put in their independent money, now throw in the money that they can do directly, and they're going to pursue not just an ideological interest of quote-unquote freedom, but their own pecuniary interests. They're going to do things that meet their business test. They're worth combined, it appears, $100 billion. So a few hundred million here or there is the equivalent of me taking you out to lunch at the In-N-Out Burger. it's nothing to them. And it's a direct threat to the policy arena, and brings us back to the Gilded Age. Focusing it on two individuals, even though many, many more will be involved, helps to gain some traction to get people uneasy, as they should be, about this wild, wild west of money and politics.
So I guess, Norman Ornstein, the Koch brothers are sort of perfect poster boys. The only one that you could do better would be Donald Sterling, right?
Donald Sterling or Clive Von Bundy if he had a lot of money. Of course, he has a lot of our money because he's basically cheated the rest of us taxpayers. But, you know, Donald Sterling is certainly a figure of immense notoriety. The Koch brothers may not be the only ones they're not who are doing this. Of course, we've got Sheldon Adelson and many others. They may, in the end, not be the worst, but they certainly are two poster boys for using vast wealth to overwhelm the rest of us who don't have that vast wealth in not just influencing elections, but the drive for money for politicians. If you tell them, I'll give you a whole bundle of money, but there's just one thing I want in the policy arena, or I can take my money elsewhere, you're going to have some sway over what happens in policy, policy that affects all of us, but could enrich their bottom line immensely.
So the bill that you mentioned, the Udall bill that Harry Reid is putting up for a vote, which you suggested was somewhat tilting at windmills, but it does actually address the whole DNA of the undoing of campaign finance reform in this country that you worked on in terms of McCain-Feingold, because it's not just trying to undo Citizens United or McCutcheon, it's also going back to Buckley v. Vallejo, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And in effect, what Roberts did with this most recent McCutcheon decision, even though he used language that suggested he was following in the tradition of Buckley, Buckley had a very different definition of corruption, a much broader one, and believed that the appearance of corruption was an adequate reason to put some restrictions on campaign money. Roberts, in effect, turned Buckley on its head and is well along the way towards decimating it entirely. What we've seen is decades of even a more than a century of campaign law and regulation that's been thrown out by this court. And it's a dangerous thing. The constitutional amendment, I support the effort that Reid is involved in, because we have to get a much broader public sensitivity to what this means. It's democracy being bought and sold in a fashion that we have not seen in this country in a very long time. And while John McCain himself says this is just going to lead us to some other massive scandal and that will bring an impetus for change, without a different Supreme Court, that impetus for change is not going to take us very far. So it's a difficult time right now, and anything we can do to gain some public sensitivity to this is really important.
Well, Norman Ornstein, does that mean then that these Judiciary Committee hearings that are going to be starting soon with Senators Tom Udall of New Mexico and Michael Bennett of Colorado, will they get the kind of attention that will put this issue on the front burner?
I don't know the answer to that, Ian. I think we're a ways away from that. There are many other things that, as we know, are motivating people right now. They're focused more on their daily lives and the sluggish economy than on the larger politics. And where they're focused on the larger politics, the attitude that so many Americans have is just, of course it's corrupt, it's awful, it's worse than it's been, to hell with them all. But I think you have to begin somewhere. And beginning by getting a hook. The constitutional amendment is one hook. The focus on the Koch brothers is a second. You've got to be able to grab attention, and I think this will help. as the hearings will as well.
But how do the Democrats get over the problem? It seems that the Republicans are a more natural fit with the wealthy and the powerful in this country, whereas the Democrats seem to have a dilemma. They get their votes from ordinary people, but they get most of their money from the same people the Republicans get their money from. Isn't that the...
That's a very good point. And the fact is that many of the party operatives on the Democratic side are not there that happy with reform. Even if Republicans manage to get more money out of the super wealthy, Democrats get plenty of their own. This is not just a problem of Republicans responding to the interests of the ultra wealthy. Imagine if you are a Democratic legislator and a leader, say, of a committee, and 10 wealthy people come into your office and take out their checkbooks and say, you know, along with my spouse, I can give $7.5 million right now and write those checks to a variety of party committees that can go to help you and your colleagues in the next election. Or I can put the checkbook away and the rest of my colleagues can. $75 million going elsewhere. All we want is a little thing here or there. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, that's going to grab your attention. And that's a big part of the problem here. And, of course, along with an effort to get a constitutional amendment, you've also got to look at some other reform ideas. You have to protect the IRS so that at least we get some disclosure. Republicans now are not only for unlimited money, but for blocking disclosure of who's giving that money, which is a different position than they took before we had the McCain-Feingold reforms. But we could also use a kind of reform that I and others have proposed that would empower small donors, that would give, you know, multiple matching funds for candidates who get over a threshold, so it's not just free money, but show that they can demonstrate some wide base of support with smaller donors. That doesn't level the playing field, but at least tilts it a little bit back away from the ultra wealthy.
So in terms of what McCutcheon's done, and since you worked on McCain-Feingold, Norman Ornstein, it would seem to me that we're going back to the days of soft money, right? And that I remember that the Democrats like soft money.
And the next bill coming forward, by the way, the next court case coming forward, the Republican National Committee has already moved a lawsuit that they want to take to the Supreme Court to bring back soft money, period. The fact is that these $3.75 million so-called limits that McCutcheon has opened up really does bring back soft money. It's almost unlimited donations by wealthy individuals. So we're already well down that path.
But do we know?
Nonsense.
But do we know, Norman, whether or not how this is going to break down? Will it favor both equally or one over the other in terms of the Democrats and the Republicans?
I think in the short and medium term, it gives some benefit to Republicans. The fact is, right now, the people who can write checks worth tens of millions of dollars, the big hedge fund people, the financial institution people, the wealthy business owners, the people like the Koch brothers, tend far more to be Republicans than Democrats. They tend to be people, especially now, who want desperately to keep their low tax rates, hedge fund people with the carried interest rate being so much lower than what people who make their money from wages pay. The low rates for multimillionaires and billionaires, and Republicans are much more in favor of lower tax rates or lower taxes on the rich. Now, there are certainly Democrats among the very wealthy. One who's become very visible is Tom Steyer. The one Republicans have always used as a pinata, of course, is George Soros, who, interestingly, has fairly much dropped out of the political giving game. And there are some in Hollywood, some maybe even listening to this program.
Right. Well, that I remember in the days of soft money that you could always count, or the Democrats could always count on Steven Spielberg writing a big check. And presumably that will come back. But as you pointed out, the playing field is hardly level given the predominance of money on the Republican side. But in terms of this long haul of a constitutional amendment, that's almost an abstraction. That doesn't grab me as an immediate campaign issue here as we approach the midterms.
Yeah, this is not going to motivate huge numbers of people in the midterms. What it might do in the short run is a couple of things. First, Democrats in the midterm elections need to get a slightly higher turnout. It doesn't have to be huge, from their normal base voters who tend to turn out in presidential campaigns but less in midterms. Younger voters, women, minorities, and ideological activists. The ideological activists are demoralized right now. They're not as likely to turn out. And the fact that a Republican victory in the Senate would give even more traction to the Koch brothers and others may increase that motivation a little bit. At the same time, we know that there will be even more of these hatchet job ads being run in a lot of Senate and House contests. We've already seen a substantial number of them, and they're going to come from organizations like Americans for Prosperity, which is backed by the Koch brothers and many of the outfits in which they're involved. And being able to showcase those ads as having come from sources that now other people recognize as having the intent that they do may make those ads a little bit less effective. So that, I think, is the goal in the short run.
But do you think the fact that President Obama has been scolding the Democrats lately and saying that they almost have a congenital defect in not showing up for midterms, given his poll ratings, is that likely to motivate the young in particular to come out and vote?
No, I don't think that it's at all likely to motivate younger voters. But a combination of things, including the realization that a Republican victory is going to give even more traction to people like the Koch brothers, might have an impact.
Well, just in closing, Norman Ornstein, I guess the main thing that the Democrats seem to count on is that the Republicans are going to screw up. And I suppose, in a way, nobody is more of a poster boy for being against campaign finance and unlimited money than Mitch McConnell. And he has his own problems in this race. But his statement today saying today's proposal by the Senate Majority Leader represents an all-out assault on the right to free speech. I don't think that's going to win too many hearts and minds, do you?
No, and, you know, I've written an awful lot about what Mitch McConnell has said and done in the past on the campaign reform front. And in particular, McConnell, for many years, was the most ardent proponent of disclosure you could find. Only when that turned to his own disadvantage did he suddenly begin to disown it and move in a different direction. I don't think he's a very credible spokesperson on this front.
Well, Norman Ornstein, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Sure, my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Norman Ornstein, who's a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a longtime observer of Congress and politics. And he writes a weekly column for the National Journal and the Atlantic called Congress Inside Out. Mr. Ornstein led a working group of scholars and practitioners that helped shape the law known as McCain-Feingold that reformed the campaign financing system. And his many books include The Permanent Campaign and Its Future, The Broken Branch, How Congress is Failing America and How to Get It Back on Track. And his most recent book, co-authored with Thomas Mann, is It's Even Worse Than It Looks, How the American Constitutional System Collided with the New Politics of Extremism. We're going to take a brief station break and be back looking into Vladimir Putin's domestic agenda that our guest sees as being remarkably similar to Nixon's appeal to the silent majority in red state America.